You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And with me is David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. Viv Govender from Ranswith is out on assignment. So it's just you and I, David. And when I sent you a sort of a casual message this morning, fairly early about football, you said, have you seen the BHP Anglo News? And just to, in case you've been living under a stone as an investor for the last 12 hours or so, BHP Group has approached Anglo American about buying the 107-year-old company in a move that offers to spark the biggest shakeup of the global mining industry in more than a decade. David, you are not only one of the most experienced, probably the most experienced person I speak to, but also informally, you're a JSE and a South African company historian. Tell me about your relationship with Anglo American since you first started applying your trade.
Well, when I joined in the early 70s, Anglo American was synonymous with the South African economy. And at that stage, it was a proper South African economy. We were a very powerful resource area, or we were the resource capital of the world. And Anglo's had its tentacles in virtually every industry here. And one of the reasons because of that, why did it have its tentacles and why did it spread out, is that it couldn't invest offshore because of exchange control. It owned the best mining companies. Maybe Goldfields had one or two equal, but it was well known for developing the Free State mines, you know, which were hugely profitable. They had platinum. The other was De Beers. You know, De Beers was the jewel in the crown. But besides that, it also had industrial interests. Later on, it developed some other industrials, you know, like SA Breweries and companies like that. So it was everywhere. It was in that stage, Barclays Bank, which became First Rand. So Anglo's was an enormously powerful business. And I suppose if you added up all their interests, they probably accounted for, you know, 30-40% of the JSE's wealth. I'm guessing at that number, but all I'm trying to, you know, illustrate is just how powerful they were. When we look at them today, they're a fraction of where they were. You know, as time went by, they started to offload and unbundle and then made the move offshore. But, I mean, when you look at them today, they're a fraction of where they used to be in terms of value.
It's very, very interesting because when I used to freelance for the SABC and we were shipped off with the recording crew to a place called Swalu, which is in the Northern Cape. And it was a very, not luxurious, but very pristine part of the Northern Cape. And it was one of the Oppenheimers, was a champion of wild dogs and the survival of wild dogs and rehabilitating them. And I went there to cover the fact that they were releasing these wild dogs into the Northern Cape. And I went there and it was owned by Anglo American. And I remember Boschendal Wine Estate in the Cape, beautiful place where you could go there at 12 o'clock, you got given a picnic and a couple of bottles of wine, and you would sit in the beautiful surroundings, also owned by Anglo American. And they started hiving off everything, and now they're back to the core. And I just wonder, David, if they did that deliberately in order to make themselves a nice bite-sized chunk so that someone can go and snap up. And as we've seen, BHP Billiton has started the process.
I don't know if it was by design or not. I just think they were outmaneuvered by all the other players in the world, you know, by the ones we know, Rio, Glencore, which are the others? Glencore. Who else is there? BHP, of course. Yes. And there are a lot of other, you know, mining companies that we're not quite sure of today. Their mainstay or the underpin was, of course, precious metals, gold. You know, Anglo's was gold, and eventually, I think the time when they actually unbundled Anglo Gold was a very sad moment for South African history. Even though it exists today, it's got no mines in South Africa. The same thing, the Oppenheimer. You know, there were a whole lot of restructures where the Oppenheimers took the big stake in diamonds, in De Beers, and then sold it back. I mean, there have been a lot of movements along the way. But whichever way we look at it, they've lost their, you know, they lost their luster. They just lost their position as being this dominant, powerful mining company. And the fact that BHP's come in now and making a bid for them in exchange for shares just shows you, whether it's accepted or not, I don't know. But I think the fact that they can just come in and snap up these assets and we'll see the end of Anglo's is, for me, like a very sad moment. It's that they're just fizzling out. No more Oppenheimer's involved. I'm sure the Oppenheimer's might still have a stake somewhere along the line in some of the smaller companies and so on. But I think, you know, the Oppenheimer's were the royal family of South Africa. If you went to 44 Main Street, which is now becoming a school, it was given away to, I don't know what the organization is called, but it's basically a university school. It had no value, but you used to walk in there and have to get on your knees and crawl in, you know, or take your shoes off.
I remember going there for breakfast once. Yeah. I mean, you did. You really did get this sense of majesty when you went there.
Yeah.
And okay, it's had a checkered history and maybe not of, you know, it's not a complicated history, but a controversial history when it comes to, you know, deaths and workers' conditions, you know, the people at the lower rung of the ladder digging the stuff out. But anyway, as you say, it's a part of history, and how it's going to be gone, David. And it will delist, obviously, if this offer is accepted.
Yep. It will. That's the sad thing, is that as long as I've been here, 52 years, Anglo has always been up there in the top 10 or the top 5. It was for many, many years. It was uncatchable. No one came close to it, and slowly it's slipped now. Where you know, Glencore is bigger than it. Certainly, BHP is bigger than it. I don't, you know, it has a market cap of about 700 million rand now. It might be more after today's movements, but this is compares with almost 3 trillion or 2.9 trillion rand of BHP. So it's a quarter the size in terms of market cap of BHP. And, you know, BHP was put together by Glencore, by Gilbertson, Brian Gilbertson. He was the man behind BHP. And, I mean, this is like the what do you call, the underlings. You know, you would look down on, even though they created Glencore back in the days, wanting to give the Afrikaners their own mining house, you know. This is, you know, to now be bought out. There was an incident where a starter, which was Mick Davis, I don't know if you remember.
I do remember Mick Davis, yes.
Went over to Mr. Moody Stewart. I think he was the chairman at that stage. He lived in Oxfordshire or some fancy place, you know, country squire. He always looked, he was obviously a very prominent man. He was the chairman of Anglo's, and there he was, Mick Davis. He's now Sir Mick Davis, and they're coming, formerly the CFO of Eskom. You know, he was a good man. He joined Brian Gilbertson, but then he formed his own company. I think emigrated, formed Xstrata, which is now part of Glencore. And I don't know whether he went with Ivan Glazenberg, but they made their way to Oxfordshire. You know, they had put a bid. They wanted to buy Anglo's.
Mm.
And can you imagine? You know, can you imagine? I think they came in there, and I think probably the meeting lasted no more than a minute or two.
How dare these people have the temerity to try to buy Anglo-American PLC? Exactly. Who was I can't remember her name now. There was an American woman that took over.
Cynthia Carroll.
And I remember having an interview with her when I was quite proactive in that. I managed to get an interview through the PR company. And she said to me, just before the interview, it was a pre-recorded interview, she said, "Please speak English because I don't understand the South African accent." I said, "Excuse me, I am English. And just please just try and listen. Maybe you should make..." I was rude to her. I said, "Maybe you should make an effort to try and listen a bit harder. Yeah. We're reporting upon your company." And that was a disastrous time for Anglo-American, I seem to remember.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest mistakes is she used huge amounts of funds to buy back the share, which turned out to be a massive disaster. Just they spent all the spare cash, which they were going to need, I think, on trying to buy back their shares for whatever reason. I can't even remember the story around it. But it turned out to be a disastrous effort. And I'm talking huge amounts of money at that stage. Mm. But I think, you know, from the time that they went to London, I think they began to lose their – they went across there thinking they were royalty and that everybody would bow down to them. It didn't happen. And I think the most humiliating events were when 25-year-old snotty analysts from some of the hedge funds and various investment funds started to attack them, you know, in the boardroom. They never had that before, but as I say, because here – everybody acted with great temerity and respect. You know, you never, when you went to Anglo's, you dare not ask bad questions or so on, you know. But there they just tore them apart. So I think it was, you know, they never really recovered from that period and that. And today, you know, things are tough for them. Things were getting tough. And I think that's in the bid that BHP are making, you know, the fact they don't want the local platinum interests and they don't want the local iron ore interests, I think, is also relevant. You know, they don't want South African assets. So they've got De Beers, which is still a big part, but they won't be, you know, BHP will still not be represented in South Africa, or if so, in a very small way.
Yeah, I mean, just to remind everybody that South 32 is the South African spin-off of BHP Billiton. Anglo-American will probably be delisted. And it's all about copper, David.
Yes.
I saw the BBC cover it, and they did quite extensive, I mean, 5-6 minutes, focusing on Anglo-American. And they put a dash between Anglo and American, which they shouldn't do, but anyway. And it's all about copper. So what's happening in the resources industry now is that the board of directors sits down with their banks and everything and say, what should we do? Should we buy a greenfields or a brownfields copper mine in Chile or Peru or Papua New Guinea, wherever it is, or should we just buy a company that has a huge copper presence? And that's what they've chosen to do for $39 billion plus shares, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's exactly right. Listen, don't think Anglo never used to do, you know. Anglo had very much the same strategy. Aside from the gold mines which they developed, I mean, later on, even De Beers, they never started De Beers. They picked it up from Cecil Rhodes, I think, through JC. I can't remember the exact, but they weren't the founders of De Beers. Kumba belonged to ISCO. You know, it wasn't there. They bought Kumba on the market. It was a bid on the market after Kumba listed. There's a little bit of complication around that. But Platinums, I think, yes, they did. But I don't know very early on whether they came in and bought existing operations. But most of their strategy has been around buying existing operations. I think Minas Rio as well, I think some of their copper interests, I don't think are greenfields or brownfields or whatever you want to call them.
Yes.
So, yeah, you know, so it's been their strategy as well. Lindsay, you can understand it. You want instantaneous returns. Now, BHP doesn't want to spend 10 years digging into the mountains of Peru or something, wherever, waiting for returns. So I think this is a much cheaper option to make the bid, even if it does seem a bit high, or I'm sure the bids will get higher. At least you then get an operating asset, you know, that you can from day one start, getting returns.
What do you think about the government response to this? Because what you've been saying, you've been waxing lyrical about the history of Anglo-American, and quite right too, for all its flaws, it has been an incredible company over the last 107 years, less so recently. A South African Mining Department spokesperson says, we don't have a response at the moment. But obviously there is some kind of sovereign legacy to consider here, and also foreign exchange, etc.
I don't see – you're going to get BHP shares. So if you're an Anglo shareholder, you're going to get BHP shares, and you're also going to get Anglo share of Amplats and Kumba. So you're going to get value. I don't know where there are objections going to come. Globally, there might be objection that they're going to – probably not control the copper market, but have a quite a heavy percentage. I don't think it's going to be more than maybe 10%, 15% of the global copper market. I don't know. I don't think, you know, so I think this would have been thought out. I'm sure they still have to go through all the hoops, but I don't know where local objections going to come. There's nothing here that they're buying up that's going to be uncompetitive. It's copper.
Yes.
And it's met coal, and the met coal's not here. The met coal, I think, is in Australia. So if I'm not mistaken, so I'm not sure, you know, whether there's going to be anything. Diamonds are
forever.
I don't know what's going to happen to diamonds. It will go to BHP, but it's still not listed. So I don't think it's going to have any impact because, you know, certainly Botswana still own still own a big chunk of Debswana and so on. So I don't know. I don't know if there will be any objection. I don't think there's merit in any of this. It doesn't affect any South African assets at all. In fact, it's unbundling. You know, it's unbundling it. They controlled it. The one thing they did, they might have controlled Anglo Plats. Now they won't have that kind of control.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
So many moving parts as well,
areas,
David.
I don't know.
There's so many moving parts. Because I look at the screen now, Anglo American PLC up 18%, Anglo American Platinum down nearly 10%.
Yeah.
How can you explain all this?
Because they're going to unbundle close to 70% of Anglo shares.
Yeah.
Of Amplats will come to the market to Anglo shareholders.
Okay.
So you're going to get their share. You're going to get their shareholding. It's going to be so for each Anglo shareholder, you're going to get X percentage of Anglo Plats and you're going to get X percentage of Kumba. So you're going to have an overwhelming supply coming onto the market that might be more than people want to hold. So they're saying, hold on, you know, expect the swarm. So that's why they moved it down.
Okay. So how do you play it now? It's going to be a long, drawn-out process, and there'll be offers and counter-offers and all sorts of things, but it looks as though it's going to happen. I mean, the fact that they got rid of Anglo Gold ages ago, and they've been making it, as I said in my introduction, a nice bite-sized chunk for someone to nibble on, means it will happen, but there'll be a bit of to-ing and fro-ing. So how do you play it now? What do you do?
Well, you see, do you want Anglos in the present form? Are you going to make more money out of BHP or out of Anglo's with its under pressure of local iron ore, platinum, diamonds? You know, if you looked at their latest numbers or production report, you know, things were under pressure. The only thing that was flat was copper. So they're not doing wonderfully well. You know, in fact, Duncan Wamblatt, what's it, Wamblatt? You know, his the CEO, sorry if I'm mispronouncing his name, but you know, he's in restructuring mode.
Mm.
So he's going to restructure. So what's he going to do? You know, his restructure would have been probably around the same kind of strategy. You know, let's get rid of iron ore. Let's get rid of these companies. You know, they're not helping us. They're actually dragging us down. You know, let's see what we can do. So I think there would have been a similar type of strategy. Around that, you know, ending off, maybe I'm bundling them and ending off with just the copper assets. So the fact that it's going to be BHP just gives them much stronger support, a stronger balance sheet, stronger management and so on. So you might get some backlash from local institutions saying, oh, I know, you know, these are cheap. We're giving it away too cheaply. Mm. The PRC normally kind of object, and they might say this is the end of our Anglos, whatever it is. I don't think there's any substance to any complaints that people can make. Personally, I'd prefer, you know, if I was an Anglo shareholder, I would certainly
take the money.
BHP, I would take the BHP shares. Yeah,
exactly. They've got a much broader portfolio. They've got oil interests, which must be doing very well for them at the moment. But anyway, David, the US GDP number came out today, and is that why the S&P is down 1.3%?
Yes, everybody's gone into worry mode now. They're now worried about stagflation because coming in as well was the PCE, that personal
consumption expenditure,
which is an indicator that the Fed like to look at, and that came in high, 3.7. So again, raising worries about the level of inflation. So you got high inflation, low growth,
Stagflation. I've heard that stagflation word for 20 years, and it's never come to fruition because central banks are far too powerful and they manage it. It's not the 1930s. So we have to admit it's not going to happen. But it gives the market an excuse to come down to a double bottom at around about 5,000 on the S&P, and up we go from there.
Yeah.
And also, what people must understand is that if the GDP number is a bit weak, it means that they don't raise rates, which has been something that has been spoken about, it might actually hasten their program to cut rates, which is good for the market.
The problem is that I think the Fed are stuck. They don't want to do anything before the election, which I think, I don't know how clever that is. But so now if you look at the forward-looking views, they reckon maybe December, November, we might get a rate cut now. But, before it was zero. But something has to be done, Lindsay. You can't, the worry is that you need to give the market something. You know, you need to just give it a push. The last thing you do want to do is to go into some kind of deep slowdown. And look, underneath it all, yes, there was high consumption, even though the GDP number was down. But still, savings are falling, wages are falling, so I think Powell knows he's got to do something. I don't know whether he's going to wait all the way through to November, December. You know, you're getting the ECB is getting edgy, and so is the Bank of England. You know, they're also getting edgy. They want to start reducing rates, but they don't want to do it if the US is not going to do anything. It doesn't help them.
No, quite right. Anyway, I think you're right. I think it'll be earlier than November. And I think, as they always say, we are dependent on data. And data comes out every week and every month. And so they'll be trigger happy. A quick talk about Tesla, because...
Yes.
It's an important one because of its standing in various indices in the United States of America. And Mr. Musk, who I know you're a really big fan of, had cancelled a meeting with Narendra Modi of India. And so that's what tells you what a situation they have at Tesla at the moment. And I don't know if I was a Tesla owner. I just went out last week because I got a quarterly bonus or something and bought a Tesla for $37,000 or something. And then I read on the news the next day, it's now $35,000. I'd be very hacked off about that, wouldn't you? They're cutting prices because of the competition from China. I don't know if the Chinese cars are as fancy as the Teslas, but they will catch up, as they always do.
They do. You know, in fact, we had a presentation. I was in a presentation from with a gentleman from UBS who's really well versed. He likes motor cars. He loves it. He's German. And, you know, he says after 3 days of getting his license, he was doing 200 Ks an hour. It's 200 Ks an hour on the Autobahn. He says, but Europe hasn't got the Autobahn. You know, he says, not all of Europe. He says, in most cases, people just want to go from A to B. And he says he drove the electric vehicles. Now, this is a German who are very proud of their engineering. And he says, they're superb. He said, if you just want to go from A to B, he says, the Chinese electric vehicles are really superb. Okay. He says, what's happened is, he says, they're clever. They got European engineering. So, you know, to help them like this. And he says, he was very impressed. So he says, beware. You know, we believe that Europeans would go for performance. He says, forget about it. They're going to give the front runners in Europe a big, big run for their money. So don't dismiss the Chinese electric vehicles. And he still thinks that it's going to take a long time before there's general acceptance, mainly for infrastructural problems. You know, it's not easy to charge your car. There's still a lot of issues around electric vehicles. But he says he's personally going for motor manufacturers that still have a good internal combustion strategy, still producing good cars, but do have, are making some electric vehicles and that. He says Tesla, you won't survive, or you'll come under pressure if you are only an EV producer. That's what he's saying. And I think this is a reason. So, and
so you're sticking to your Mini. You're going to stick to your Mini Cooper, David.
Yes, I've got a Peugeot now.
Have you?
Why did you do that? I've got a good price for my Mini after 10 years. And when I went to look for the new Mini, I mean, the price was ridiculous for the amount that I drive. And it's a lovely car on that. So I was pottering around. I went to look for a Fiat. I wanted a bubble. I said, no, this was like driving a lawnmower. You know, I could have got a washing machine engine. I was very disappointed.
I haven't had a car for 7 years, but my last car was a Fiat 500. And you might think that, you know, I'm 6'5", and you think that's ridiculous. But the cockpit, the height of the cockpit is more spacious than, for example, a BMW 3 Series. So that's why I got it. And I don't have kids to transport anymore and lots of shopping to do. Mm-hmm. So I bought one of those. They were very good. But so you chose the Peugeot. That's interesting.
To the 208, a new one, small, but it's brilliant. Inside, beautifully appointed, lovely, leather seats, everything, and it costs me nothing, and it goes well. You know, so I'm for the driving that I do, which is from A to B, you know, if I do 100 Ks a week, that's a hell of a lot. You know, so I don't.
Gosh, so, okay, let's have a look at the market. So dollar rand 1905 was 1935, not 24 hours ago, I think. British pound against the rand, 2379. Euro rand is 2041. Euro dollar 107.10, which is unchanged from yesterday. Let's have a look at the commodities now. Gold price, it's come well off its highs in the last week, but still hanging in there, up $4 to $23.28 an ounce. Platinum, 917, which is $7 better, and palladium down $28 to which is down 2 2/3%. Let me have a look at the oil price, which has suddenly lost a little bit of its luster. Brent crude is 87.56, down 0.4%, and West Texas is $82.25, which is down just over 0.5%. Copper, which has been part of our conversation today, up 2.1% to $4.55. Per pound. What else have we got? Wheat down another 2.6%. It's getting hammered recently. Coal prices down about 1%. But anyway, I wonder if the, I don't know, it may be just a short-term sentiment thing, but I wonder if the BHP Anglo story is affecting certain commodities and certain clever people trying to say, well, what happens when they do take over? Does that mean they monopolize the industry so there's no competition? I don't know. But certainly copper doing very well today, David. And what about to that company that you alerted me to, Copper 360, I think it's called. What was it called?
Oh, yeah.
What has that done recently? That must be...
It's still on another good day today.
Yeah.
Up 15% today.
Blimey.
16%. Yeah, I know. Look, this is a very small operation, but they've started to dig and produce copper, whatever it is, the ore, you know, which they ship off and turn into copper. So this is a very old area. You know, it's an area that had been mined, neglected, but they believe they can do better. And it's very much like Orion as well, which is another business here. Where they're mining the old O'Keeppe mine, you know, and this is an area where we know there's been copper, but nothing profitable has come for them for generations. So these are hopefully small miners that can make us into a big mine. You know, we saw this with Pan African in the eastern, what was the Eastern Transvaal or Mpumalanga, you know, where they were able to get some old ore bodies and deposits and turn it out into some decently profitable mines. So I never turn my nose up at people like this, you know, who've got the will to kind of go out and dig holes and, you know, hunt for metals. So good luck to them.
Luck to them. Okay, elsewhere we've got the S&P 500 futures on my screen down now down 1.4%. But still clinging on to 5,036. This is one that I flagged on X a while ago, and I said, look, it looks absolutely awful. And that was the South African 10-year bond. It's now 11.17%, which is a yield that's up 3 2/3%. And that is very worrying to me. The US 10-year, also not good. 4.70%, which is a 1.1% rise. So interest rates rising worldwide. And South Africa, of course, if it grows, if someone catches a cold in the bond market worldwide, we get flu. That's an old corny statement, isn't it?
But index, it done is that. Worries there. You mentioned, I think the fact that your tenure is a 470, I don't know, what did you have, 471?
470, 470 in a
looks,
bit, yeah.
It looks like they're abandoning it, you know, worries that rates will go up. Lindsay, you know the bond market, you know the commodity markets. I mean, this is trading on the minute. You know, you have no idea where it's going to be next, and it's very difficult to try and forecast where it's going to be, you know, tomorrow, the next day. But that's the nature of those markets. So for the meantime, it's the worry about stagflation. That's the word you're going to hear a lot of. And it's not good for equity markets.
Not at all. Just one piece of news that's come out of the JSE since we've been speaking. That's Coronation Fund Managers' assets under management and trading statement. It says here, total assets under management as at the 31st of March was $631 billion. And it says, and there's quite a long trading statement, which I haven't read. And the market obviously hasn't had a chance to digest it because the market was closed when it came out. Further trading statement will be released, providing shareholders with ranges for EPS, HEPS, and everything else. So anyway, I don't know. What do they do with all that money? It must be tricky.
In our market, well, they're allowed to go offshore. They've got bonds. They go into all different assets. For me, it would be a headache to have that money, you know, especially. And then if I mean it, you know.
Think of the commission, David.
I know, but they do that, you know, and I think a lot of it is products and various, you know, they've got exposure to a huge amount of local stocks. That's not easy. I look at the market all the time and I shake my head. I have no idea where to go in the local market. I would not know where to go.
Clicks came out today and we haven't even spoken about that. Isn't it strange? I mean, normally we'd be all over Clicks and it was down slightly after its results, but we've been talking about Tesla and commodity resources acquisition. So, anyway, on the JSE today, Anglo American closed up nearly 19% for reasons that we've outlined in this podcast. Karoo up 12.25%, Redefine up 2.7%, African Rainbow Minerals a 2.4% winner, and Alpha Min has gained 2% today. On the downside, Anglo American Platinum down 9.5%, Northam's following its near neighbour 5.5% weaker, Sasol down 4.4%, Exxaro down 3.33%. Yeah, Sasol, look at that, it's 128. Exxaro down 3.33%, and Sappi down 3%. Every single one is a commodity producer, whether you're drilling or you're digging. That's not a good sign for the JSE or the Rand.
No, it's not a good sign. You know, because this is supposedly our saviour. This is one area of the market that we're hoping turns around and provides some kind of underpin. So I think under these conditions, no, you know, it's... it's not good. You know, we hope it. I think the other worry is that when we see the US GDP and, you know, we know that things are going to be delayed and growth delayed, that's not good for commodity markets. Even though you're getting some kind of support coming through from China, but that's more on the tech side than anything. So, no, it's not good. And we're going into an election as well, but I don't think
5 weeks to go, David. You know? 5 weeks. Will you vote?
I think, of course, I vote. Yeah, whatever. I have to register my anger, whatever it is. But there's the belief here that if you march on the union buildings, there's still billions and billions of dollars worth of diamonds and gold and everything hidden somewhere in a basement. You know, that's the popular view, that this country is still, has enormous wealth hidden somewhere. anyway.
Give us the closing JSE indices. Give us the closing JSE indices and value traded, please.
Yeah. So we closed down 0.25%, 0.25% at 74329. There was a little bit of lift in resources, and that was mainly because of Anglo American. So that index up 2.8%, and yet the precious metal index which embodies Anglos and the gold shares and that was down 0.6%. So it was all at the top. It was all Anglos that was behind the kind of rise there. Yeah. Financials sloppy, down 0.25%. Banks also down 0.4%. Consumer discretionary down 1.2%. That's our big industrials. The industrial index down 1.5%. Property slightly better. And for whatever reason, I haven't looked at some of the property shares. Value traded, I thought with Anglos today, there'd be a big day. Nah, just over 20 billion, 20.3 something. Or yeah, which isn't much. Anglos was, okay, here you are. This is interesting because normally it's Naspers that dominates. But today it was Anglos, 3.3 billion rand, which made up 17.5%. Amplats, 1.3 billion, which made up 6.9% of the market. So, yeah, it did dominate. So can you imagine if we took it away? Billiton as well, 4.3% of the market. So, yeah,
I've got
the
one
story
more,
did have some impact.
I've got one more question for you, or talking point, and it's not to do with football. I'm getting very excited about Brighton Man City later on. A luxury goods, Gucci's numbers were horrible.
Yes. Which one, sorry, did you say?
Gucci. Didn't Gucci come out with results?
Oh, you're Kering, yes.
Yes.
Terrible. That's management. That's got to do with the product.
So it hasn't shaken your resolve on luxury goods, no? You still like luxury goods.
Yes. I think, you know, I still think that there's still sufficient underlying support and demand, but you've got to be very careful where you go. You know, you've got to be Kering. It's the product. They've lost their way. You know, if you look at Hermes.
Hermes,
still superb. Even LVMH, good numbers that came out of them. Of course, China's slowing and things are slowed down with interest rates at these levels, but certainly nothing disastrous. Ferrari, which is not only my top, you know, my top choice, still doing well.
Well done.
Still have to line up for your car. Yeah. So I think if you look at those, L'Oreal came out with superb numbers. So it's, you've got to be careful. You know, we saw Estee Lauder last year, got their China in strategy wrong, and I think Kering as well. Gucci is just letting them down. The brand is losing its, you know, just losing its appeal.
I saw, and this is my very final statement, but when you talk about luxury goods, I've seen a four-part documentary on the island of Ibiza, and it's called Ibiza, Secrets of the Party Island. You've no idea the ostentatious wealth that is going on. And this is just one island. It's not Dubai. It's everywhere. It's Ibiza. It's Saint-Tropez. And everywhere, people spend 35, 40,000 euros on a night out. And so what does that mean when they want to buy a watch? There was a watch stolen because there were watch gangs in Ibiza. A watch was stolen and they recovered it. It's by a company called Richard Mille, I think, and it was €500,000 watch.
Yeah.
To me, that makes it actually, it's sickening to see that wealth.
When I go to New York and I walk down Fifth Avenue and I go into these absolute temples of luxury. What do you call it? I can't think of a word. A mammon. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, this, I go into the new Tiffany. I'm knocked out because I can't understand that money.
No.
I can't understand that people, as you say, you know, I just look there and say, okay, if these people are prepared to sell, if they prepare to make this kind of investment in Fifth Avenue, in temples like this, Prada, you name them. And, you know, the brands that we don't even know. So, okay, I'm going to buy the shares, you know, because it obviously doesn't affect the workers, the people that work in my company. You know, this is at a different level. And it's staggering. It's absolutely staggering.
It is. Okay. So and if you want to know,
we don't know it. Yeah.
If you want to be disgusted by wealth, I mean, wealth is great, and if you use it wisely and use it conservatively, but when wealth gets out of control, like on the island of Ibiza, it's horrible. I was shaking my head the whole time, but it was a fascinating watch. It's called Ibiza: Secrets of the Party Island on BBC iPlayer at the moment. I sound like an advertisement, David. Thank you very much for your time, as always. David Shapiro is from Sassman Securities, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.